Chapter 10. Krul's Judgment. Beast Krul observed the street from a stanchion of a monorail, crushed into the space between bracket and trackbed that allowed the rail to flex on its pneumatic suspension, although a carefully placed block of adamantium prevented it from doing so for the time being. Apart from a slightly bumpy ride for the commuters riding between the Archive Minorum and their tribal hap towers, there was no indication Krul was there, down in the underhive of the Antipodean Minoris region. He was shielded from the street by the architecture of the transit line and from augurs by the electricity sputtering from the monorail's fraying cables. It was extremely uncomfortable, but comfort had never been a consideration in an assassin's career. Lurking had been his lot in life. Even while monitoring traffic in Tashkent Hive, he had been watching unobserved. If there was a time in his life when he hadn't hidden, he didn't remember it. The Venenum Temple had been dark. When he hadn't been training to fight or to poison, he had been training to hide. That was his role, to hide and strike in close and depart. And he was good at it. The land here had been mountainous before it had been covered over. Rather than level the peaks, the architects of the hive had simply boxed them in, creating this small underworld. The metal sky of the higher levels pressed down hard on the mountain stumps. An angle of stone and filthy metal defined the boundary of the underhive. Ancient structures from the dawn of mankind's history slumped against the giant supporting columns of the hive above. Rotting rockcrete slums closed in his perceptions to this one dirty street, washed by effluent rain and frequented by nobody he would like to meet. He had been waiting a very long time, and Krul was getting nervy. Ordinarily, Krul asked no questions about a particular play beyond those that would help him refine the mission. This time, there was a question that niggled him as he waited in that noisome space. Why did Vangerich want Werner Zech dead? Vangerich confided a lot in Krul, but not everything. Krul had seen how ineffectual the High Lords had become. He understood Vangerich's frustration, but why Zech? Zech had been no worse than the others, and in Krul's estimation he had been a sight better than most of them. Most of the High Lords were either good at running their adepta but not very good at politics, or the reverse. Zech was among maybe three of the High 12 that were good at both. The Grand Provost Marshal did not take much for himself in the way of riches and prestige. He did his duty, in fact. He did more. He took as much interest in the local arbitrators of terror as he did in the more prestigious, star-spanning lawgivers of the Adeptus Arbites. The fact that Krul was watching over some run-down sub-precinct in the back end of the world and not stalking the halls of a palace was proof of that. A facility for the common touch and an interest in all levels of his organization might not be the only reason Zech was there. It could also signify something else. It could be proof that Zech knew he was being watched. Better to be attacked surrounded by seasoned urban warfare specialists than soft servants in the high hives. If that was the case, then Krul's gambit here was not going to work. He was going to have to go in and finish the job personally. Zek's private vehicle waited outside the sub-precinct, protected by four Adeptus Arbites armored suppression transports. It had been on the curb for hours. That was the first issue provoking Krul's nerves. The second was the inexorable train of thought that thundered through his mind as often as the monorails shuttling dead-eyed scribes between the only two buildings they'd ever seen. It went like this. If Zech was judged worthy of termination, a fate Krul thought he did not deserve, then why not all the High Lords? And if all the High Lords were in line for assassination, then the reason Krul was here might be that his own specialization best equipped him to deal with a massively augmented Grand Provost Marshal. But it could also be that Vangerich wanted Krul out of the way while his grand plan played out. That was bad news, because it meant Vangerich had lost his trust in his favored weapon. Vangerich's trust was not something Krul wished to lose. If Vangerich was shutting him out, it would be a short step to shutting him down. He returned his attention to the mission. There was only the mission. He had been taught that since his earliest years. There was no higher authority than the Grand Master. He repeated this to himself until it made a nonsensical babble in his mind. And yet his doubts grew stronger. What if Vangorich wanted him dead, too? The sound of a poorly maintained door sliding open drew his attention back to the sub-precinct. Krul held up his magnoculars to his eyes. A man who looked very much like the Grand Provost Marshal got into his private transport. A second later, this same man was comprehensively gassed by the toxin micro-device Krul had secreted in its chassis. Green fog billowed from the vehicle, corroding everything it touched. As alarms blared the length of the street and arbitrators flooded from the building, Krul reviewed the picked capture of his magnoculars. The man was too broad, too short, only by millimeters, but there it was. The heat pattern of his organics did not match the data files contained in the magnoculars. That was not Zek. An armored speedster sent up clouds of blue smoke as it burned sin rubber on the potholed hardtop. Someone was panicking. "That is Zek," said Krul. He unfolded himself from his hiding place and dropped 6 meters to the ground. He yanked a piece of scrap plasteel from the side of the monorail pylon, uncovering a high-powered motorbike. Less than a second later, he was in pursuit, arbitrators shouting and firing ineffectually as he roared off after the speedster. The light car raced along the Underhive streets at breakneck speed, hurtling down the road, driving straight at piles of garbage and blasting them apart. The speedster took a right-angle turn down a narrow lane into a slum. Filthy shacks, squatting in the ruins of dead civilizations, were shattered by the ground car's prow. The dispossessed scattered in every direction. Krul jinked around them skillfully. The driver was good, but no one was as good as Krul. The speedster accelerated towards a bridge over a riverbed dry of water for dozens of centuries. The rusting supports of the bridge whipped past. To the left was an ancient seabed, the braided marks of the dead river's outflow still visible under cluttered piles of junk. A little further out, where the seabed flattened, the hive bottom rested directly on Terra's rock. A wall of plasteel, higher than a cliff, hurried the horizon near. Dirty windows looked over the stone and filth of Terra's true self. In the bottom of the wall was a neglected transit tunnel, edged with dirty hazard striping. Placards indicated it led to the upper levels of the Nozalant Hive. No one in the Underhive was wealthy enough to own private transportation, and no one from above would want to go there. The road was as empty of traffic as the river was of water, its toll gates derelict. Sensing escape, the driver accelerated the speedster. Krul opened the throttle on his bike, sending it hurtling after with an animal roar that reverberated around that small metal hell. The car approached the tube. Krul depressed a button on his bike's handlebar, sending a compact rocket streaking from the front fairing. It hit the car's rear right wheel just as it was nearing the tunnel and blasted the wheel free, sending it burning and bouncing off the abandoned road into a cluster of ruins that must have been 20,000 years old if they were a day. The car bucked, slewing off the road, and impacted with a fatal crunch into the edge of the tunnel. Krul decelerated. He drew his pistol and leapt off the bike, leaving its machine spirit autodrive to take it away from him. He rolled as he landed, coming up with both hands on the gun. His sleeveless, skin-tight mission suit was covered in filth from his weight. His hair itched. Krul was not in a good mood. The flames of ruptured fuel cells burst from the car's engine compartment. A pathetic machine whining came from its onboard systems, the sound of a terrified prey animal. He went to the driver's station first. The windows were opaque from the outside, and he couldn't see in. Holding his pistol in one hand, he punched his adamantium-reinforced fists through the window, grabbed the door, and ripped it free. A man who can rip a car door off, he thought, and I was helpless against the orcs of Ulanor. Krul realized he was allowing his frustrations of the last months to distract him, and that nearly cost him his life. He was too slow, putting a frozen needle of toxin into the head of the driver. The rear door of the car burst off in a shower of glass. Krul turned as it flew through the air and landed with a bang on the road, dragging a trail of sparks from the rough surface. That delay could not be regained. Half a second, but that brief span of time would have enabled him to fill Zek with toxin needles if he hadn't been thinking about orcs. Zek's bionic hand slapped Krul's gun hard, breaking it and sending it wheeling through space to be lost in the detritus of man's forgotten past. "Krul, the Grand Master's pet," said Zek. He hauled himself from the wreck of the car, and the remnants of his uniform fell burning from his body. His torso, exposed, revealed how much of Werner Zek's original body remained, and it was a low proportion of the whole. All of his left side had been replaced with banded plastile from below his sternum to the tips of his fingers. His right arm possessed a little more of his birth organics, being augmetic only below the shoulder. Both of his legs were mechanical. The few patches of skin uncovered by metal were livid with fresh burns. Zek appeared not to feel them. "I will not fall to that serpent!" Zek wrenched a piece of metal from the car and threw it at Krul's head. Krul dodged, put himself into a guard position, and backed away as Zek advanced. "Traitor!" roared Zek. "You would slay a High Lord!" He charged at Krul. The assassin sidestepped. Zek's fist punched a blow into the rockcrete road that would have shattered a man's ribcage to mince. "I have been ordered to terminate you. My wishes don't come into it." "A man who obeys orders without thought is as much a traitor as one who thinks treason for himself. Your master would usurp the rule of the Imperium. You are as culpable as he." "I've been given orders only to kill you," said Krul. He shouldn't talk to his marks, but his misgivings were resurfacing. Zek swung again. Krul ducked the blow. A grinding sound came from Zek's left knee. The crash had done its damage. "Then surely you must care for your own life as much as you do for your duty," said Zek. "Vangorich will end you once this is over." Krul paused. Zek spoke Krul's own thoughts aloud. Zek's fist pounded into Krul's chest. The metal in his ribs flexed, cracking the bone it was bonded to, and he was sent staggering back. Zek laughed and drew back his fist. Krul caught it in his own hands, twisted, straightened the Grand Provost Marshal's arm into a lock. Servo motors whined as he pushed, but Krul's musculature was as enhanced as his skeleton, and slowly he forced Zek to the ground. "The problem with this model of augmetic is that although it's very strong, the shoulder attachments are quite weak in this one direction," said Krul, and slammed the heel of his hand hard into Zek's shoulder. Zek roared in pain. He swatted at the assassin with his free hand, but Krul took the blows, and he pushed harder and harder. With a wrenching crack, Zek's left arm buckled around the joint. The plastile ruptured, wires fizzed, and the arm fell limp. Krul released it. The Provost Marshal staggered to his feet, but Krul spun and kicked hard at his weakened knee joint, shattering it, and Zek fell to the ground again. "When I put someone down, they stay down, Zek." He lifted his metal-bonded fists and prepared to deliver the final blow. "Wait, wait," cried Zek. "You paused. You know he will kill you." "We've all got to die sometime," said Krul. "But why like this, in dishonour? What of your oaths of loyalty?" "I owe my loyalty to the Grand Master, no other man." "That is untrue. You owe your loyalty to the Emperor of Mankind, not to Drakon Vangorich. Think, Krul. Your officio is a check on the others. But where is the check on the assassins? Vangorich has gone rogue. Is this how you want to spend your life, murdering those who disagree with Vangorich?" "He doesn't need to do this. Thane appointed him Lord Protector. His only reason can be that he wishes to rule alone." Krul lowered his hands. "You see it," Zek said, encouraged. He pulled himself up, resting on his good knee. "You've got to stop him, Krul. You're the only one who can get close to him. The rest of us are finished. If he has sent you after me, the most loyal of the Emperor's servants, then not one of the High Lords will see the week out." "I think that's why I'm here," said Krul. "He sent me away. He guessed I wouldn't agree."
"And you discover this now?"
"I'm not as intelligent a man as Drakon Vangorich. Do you think he'd have me around if I were?"
Anger rose up in him. He shook his head and began to pace.
"It won't work. I'm next on his list. I better disappear."
"You've got to try. If he takes over the Imperium, it will be a disaster. No one man can rule. Finish his reign before it begins and call back the Lord Gilliman. You will be a hero."
"Do you think I care about fame?"
Heroism? Do you think I want a statue? Krul laughed. I'm an assassin. Then think about the future of the human race. If you don't care about that, then what have you been killing for? You're nothing but a monster.
Krul stepped back. The ruined face of Zek remained awkwardly upturned. Zek looked like the monster, not he. The true monstrousness was worn on the inside, the way Horus and his brothers had hidden their treachery. Krul might get away and live a life on some backwater world, always looking over his shoulder. That would make him no better than Vangarich, complicit in his treachery by his refusal to act.
All right. I can't face going back to Tashkent anyway. I'll act the loyal attack dog, and then I'll bite him hard. But I need proof I killed you. It's the only way he'll swallow the lie and let me get near to him. Take what you need, Zek said. The relief in his voice was palpable. You're not going to like it.
Krul pulled out a monofilament garrote from his utility belt.
Wait, stop. There must be another way. I am sorry, said Krul, but I'm going to need your head.